Okay, guys, we'll do a little bit of highlights of Na'agada Mitzvah Hashem. Since I'm the first speaker, maybe we'll start from the beginning. All right, so a few ha'aras on the opening pieces of the Haggadah. So one of the first things we say, right, when we open up Maggid, it's a question, even if it's part of Maggid, it's really introduction to Maggid, is we talk about the matzah, which we'll talk about in a second, that Klal Yisrael ate in Mitzrayim, halach ma'anya, right? And right away, as soon as we introduce the matzah, we say, you know what? Whoever wants kol dichvin yeseh v'yechol, whoever wants to come and eat, whoever's hungry should come and get a meal, right? And the obvious question that many of the mafarshim, I'm sure everyone has heard the kasha before, many of the mafarshim are bothered by why now when you're starting the Haggadah is now the time to invite people to your meal? It's a little bit of a strange custom we have. If anything, invite people in shul, right? We're coming home, everybody's home, we're starting the Haggadah, and the first thing we do, we open up Maggid, is whoever's hungry is going to come and eat. I actually just saw a page today from the Yaivitz. He says they're called the Yifsach. We have two Lashonot. They should come in Yifsach and Yechal. He says one is talking about Goyim, actually, and one is talking about Yidin. So we're mamash inviting the whole world. Whoever needs a meal should come and eat. So there's a beautiful idea I heard. And this is actually based on there's a Haggadah. You know, a lot of times we have Haggadahs. We get all these fancy Haggadahs. Probably the most written on topic in Judaism is the Haggadahs. But there's a Haggadah from the Rishonim. There's a Haggadah that's actually brought from the Rishonim. The Moser Rav Kook has a beautiful Haggadah. They have all the Rishonim's Pshatim on Haggadah. So one of the Pshatim there is from the Or Chos Chaim. And he says an amazing, so I'll just give a little bit of a background. There's a Medrash, the Tana Develeyo Rabbah in Perek Chaf Aleph. And there it talks about an amazing thing. The Medrash there says that Klal Yisrael, that when they were in Mitzrayim, they all got together, and they made a pact with each other. They decided that they're going to do gemilas chasadim zeim zeh. They're going to make sure they take care of each other, and they're going to be there for each other, and they're going to do chesed. And b'schus that Klal Yisrael will nigal mitzrayim. They were nigal b'schus this chesed, which is interesting on a few different levels, because the Magister I think even says that they only had one. What could they do already? They didn't have much opportunities to do mitzvahs, and they decided that they are going to make sure that they do this mitzvah behider. So the Medrash says there was one mitzvah that they're able to do, and they did it many, many times. And through that, they were nigal mitzrayim. So the Mefarshim asked, like, what exactly was the chesed that Klal Yisrael did? You know, we talk about chesed now. You have the chesed organizations. Rabbi Miller arranges, you go on Thursdays, you could go on the off to go here to this orphanage or to this, you know, shelter. Or you can do Tom Cheshav, a lot of different things to do. We go during the year. But what exactly did they have in Mitzrayim? What exactly was the chesed? So there's one pshat from the Shach. The Shach Allah Torah says, he says an amazing thing that we know. Klal Yisrael had a very, very strict work schedule. And there was an exact amount that Paro, Maskona Salavenim, they had a very specific amount that they had to do. And I think it brings down there that every Paro Mamash figured out exactly how much each guy could handle. So you could take a guy like Litwin. He's like a big guy. He could probably like carry a lot of stuff. He's like, yeah, he's, you know, he's, this guy's got, he's pumping iron. So he could probably do X amount of bricks per day. And he had to do that. Everyone had their own maskonis. So what was the chesed? The chesed was that if one guy was able to finish his maskonis, his quota for the day, before someone else, he would go and help his friend. He would go and help his friend out. That was the chesed. They didn't have that. They didn't have to go. They didn't have big organizations. They didn't have Tom Cheshavs. Right. Just looking at someone else and seeing someone in their matzah doing, that was the chesed they did. And that was the chus they got out of Mitzrayim. That's one shot. There's another shot that Or Chos Chaim brings down here on the Haggadah. Or Chos Chaim says, you know what the chesed was? That what did Klal Yisrael eat? And that'll bring us to the next segue, to the next point, but we have time. We don't have a lot of time here. But what did Klal Yisrael eat in Mitzrayim? They ate matzah. We think about they ate matzah when they left Mitzrayim. As we'll see in a minute. They actually ate Mitzrayim. They ate matzah in Mitzrayim for 210 years. And why did they eat that? So the Rishonim explained, because in Mitzrayim, Paro wanted to get the biggest bang for his buck. So what are you going to feed slaves? It's a very good idea to feed them matzah, because matzah is very quick to make. So they don't have to have a long lunch break. They don't need like 2.5 hours, you know, before second Seder. They could just have a small lunch break. They have a quick 18 minutes. They have the matzah, it's in and out. That's number one. Number two is that it lasts a long time. So you don't have to, you don't get hungry. So you have some matzah in the morning. It lasts. It stays in the me'ayim. It stays in the stomach for a long time, and then it lasts. So that's what they ate. So everybody got a very, very short amount of time for lunch break. Yeah, whatever, 15 minutes, 18 minutes, right, to make their matzahs. And if somebody wasn't maspik to get his matzahs out, so his friend who finished 2 minutes earlier would help his friend out and give him some matzah. So it comes out that according to El Chaim, the reason, what are we doing? We're saying, halach ma'anya, we're starting off the Seder, this is the matzah. That was the broken matzah because you would break off a piece. I think he says you break off a piece and you give it to your friend. You would give a little bit to your friend. So that was the schus, the matzah that they had in Mitzrayim. The schus that they dealt with the matzah in a way of gemilas chasadim. That's what got them out. So when we're starting the Seder, we're talking about lo nigla yisrael b'Mitzrayim ela b'schus gemilas chasadim that they did with each other, and the gemilas chasadim happened specifically through the matzah. So that's why we're starting off the whole Seder with this, because this was the whole schus, the whole reason that they're able to be yotzei, which is an important yesod, because a lot of times we think that if you don't have Rabbi Miller around, you can't do chesed. Right? What's chesed? Okay, if he gets me to an organization. Right? But the etzem, that's a total shibush of what real chesed is. Chesed, you don't necessarily need an organization. You don't need a big, big posters and people making a big deal. Chesed, a person, my Rebbe once told me that somebody came to ask him, he said, I want to get out of yeshiva a little bit. I want to do some chesed. So he says, you're not bikaris. He says, why is it not bikaris? He says, if you think that you're sitting all day and maybe he didn't say that strong, but I'm just trying to, he did say actually for different reasons, not bikaris. But he said, if you're in yeshiva all day and you don't have an opportunity to do chesed with somebody else, so you're missing, what's wrong with you? Everywhere you look, you have your friend, you have to help, he misses, he's not feeling well, get him some food. You help somebody get a chavrus, you learn with somebody during Bein HaStarim, he helps. Go out with somebody. There's so much to do that a person does on his daily basis where they can be involved in chesed and care about somebody else. And sometimes we get lost in the fact that it's all about the big name or the big organization, the big thing. And that hagufa, that was the lesson of the halach ma'adi. When you have nothing else, you have no food, you have no job, you have no anything, and you're able to get out, you're able to do chesed with someone else with the piece of matzah you have. You don't have a big organization, you don't have a lot of money to give. Every person can do chesed on his own level. Just to add in one more knach, and that's the pshat. This I heard from my Rebbe, Rav Resnick. He said that was the pshat that he says we say in benching Rosh Chodesh. We just had Shabbos HaChodesh. The week before we had Shabbos benching, right? Rosh Chodesh benching. So what do we talk about? We say, Mish asa nasa mavaseinu, v'gol asa mo'adus l'chayrus, hu yigol asa no b'karoy, v'yikabitz in the chayna b'abra kanvoy sa'aretz. And what do we say at the end? Chaveim ko yisrael v'noymar amin. Everybody's together with Noam Ram. What does Chaverim Kol Yisrael and Noam have to do with anything? We're talking about, okay, the Chodesh, we're hoping for the Geula, we're davening, so that I get. Why do you end off the thing, we just want to sing Achenu now at the end, it's a beautiful thing. What does that have to do with Misha Sanisa? The Pshat is based on this Medrash, that the whole S'chus of Klal Yisrael, getting Nigal Min Mitzrayim, the whole S'chus for our Geula, and we're talking Misha Sanisa Mavaseinu V'gol Asam, who Yigal Osanu, the whole schus of the geula is coming through specifically chaverim klal yisrael v'noymer amen. The chaver, when they get together, klal yisrael makes a pact with each other that no matter what situation we're in, we're always going to be helping each other. We're going to be looking out for one another, even in the smallest things. I'll give you a piece of my matzah. I'll help you out with your bricks. That is going to be the schus of geula, and that's why specifically during that we mention that topic. We'll just say quick one more yisoid. We'll try to say it a little quickly, and that is. There's a very interesting, we mentioned before, that halach ma'anya, right, this is the bread, the achla avasana ba'ara de Mitzrayim. If you read the words, so what are we saying? That Klal Yisrael ate this, our forefathers ate this in Mitzrayim. Now you read it quickly, you might think, you know what? Okay, what does that mean? That meant when we left Mitzrayim, right? Because later on in the Seder, we say this is the symbol of the Cheirus. When we went out of Mitzrayim, we had the matzah. But the Rishonim all point out that that's not what we're referring to. This is the matzah, like we just said, according to the first pshat, we said from the Orchaz Chaim, this is the matzah that they ate for 210 years. Now think about it. It's a very strange thing. Klal Yisrael is in Mitzrayim for 210 years, and now they come out, and on the Zman of Geula, the night where they're getting free, and finally the big bash, and we're out, what does Moshe Rabbeinu say? What's on the menu? Matzah. The same matzah you've been eating for 210 years, that is the first course being served before the Korban Pesach. You would think we're having a steak dinner, so we should have like some gishmak kapitas, like we serve at the banquet. You know, Jacob will be back for the banquet. But you know, we have nice things that matzah, dafka, the thing which was the symbol of the avdus. So what's the pshat? So the maral asks us in Gvuras Hashem, in Perek Lamed, and hey, he asks us a little bit both in Acher. He asks that we know that the maror is supposed to symbolize the marirus, right? So the maror symbolizes the bitterness that we had in Mitzrayim. It makes a lot of sense. The maror is very bitter. The bread, which is supposed to symbolize the cheirus, so what's the bread? The bread is made out of nothing. There's nothing gishmak about the bread. The bread, if the maror is all about something bitter, so the bread should be have honey and you know, sugar and honey and chocolate syrup, whatever. It should be all gishmak of things that are reminding us about cheirus. So these are the two questions. The same idea I'm asking from two different angles. Why dafka matzah is the thing they've been eating in avdus and now they're eating it again? And number two, why would matzah b'chlal be a symbol of cheirus when matzah b'etzem has nothing to it? So I think it's a very important yesoid here, a very important yesoid about cheirus, and it's based on the on the Sforno, which Rabbi Mintz said over at the barbecue. But the Sforno says that Achodesh Zelachem, Klal Yisrael gets the mitzvah of Achodesh Zelachem, the first mitzvah they get. That the Sforno says that up until now you have not been a bailiff, you haven't been in control. Mitzrayim has determined everything about you, your life, what you do, how you do it, what your goal in life is, which is really nothing. Rosh Hashiva Poland said that Avodas Parech means Avoda, where you get nothing for it. You work really, really hard and get nothing, right? The worst thing you could do to somebody is have them work really hard for something and then just destroy it. That was Avodas Parech. Their life meant nothing and they had nothing of their own. They couldn't determine anything. They couldn't be in control of anything. He says, now you are in control of this man. So on a deeper level, what does it mean to be in control of the Zman? It means that a person's mode of thought, a person's attitude towards life, a person's simcha sachaim is not determined based on his environment, based on any artificial stimulus, right? We think, and very often we shape our view of ourselves and how we're doing and whether or not we should be happy and feel good about ourselves based on what's going on around us. What's the environment? What are all of the outside factors which really we very often have very little control over? He says the aside of the matzah, just like the Sfarno is saying by the Chodesh, that you're in charge of the time. That means you decide, number one, how to spend your time, right? You, Klal Yisrael, is in charge of making the Chodesh, deciding when Rosh Chodesh is now. It's our Zman, it's our time. But besides that, we don't let the time control us. We're in control of the time. We are in control of our lives. We're in control of our cheirus. And therefore, we can take the exact same matzah. We can take the exact same scenario, which up until now has been bitter and difficult for us. And we can now change it around and decide, you know what? I'm going to be happy with the exact same matzah. I'm going to now be in charge of my life. I'm going to make my life worthwhile. I'm going to be proud of what I'm doing. I'm going to be motivated. And that's going to give me a simcha sachaim regardless of what's going on outside around me. And that's why I don't need any artificial. I don't want anything artificial in the bread. I don't even want it to rise. I want it to be the bare minimum ingredients of flour and water. And I'm going to take it away and make what I want to make out of it. That's the true symbol of cheirus. And that's really, you saw, I just talked to Rav Dober about this the other day, that really, right, from Yiddish perspective, simcha is very, 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 very much not a product of our environment or of the stimulus and things going on around us. And if a person lives his life like that, so he's completely subjected to what's going on around him, which he has no control of. But that is the yesod of the cheirus, and that's why we're starting. Holach ma'anya, this is the lechem we ate for 210 years, and this is the lechem of our cheirus. Because now that we're in control, we're the ones that are going to determine what our life is about, the purpose, and our satisfaction and happiness in our lives is determined based on us. And we can take the exact same lechem that was the avdus lechem, and we're going to turn it around to be into the cheirus tikkun lechem. And that's also why, like based on Maral is saying, we have no artificial things in the lechem to hone in this point and to make it clear. Okay, so I'm trying to keep to this month. So those are two ha'aras we mentioned. Number one, both based on, just to start you off on the other, number one, why are we inviting in the guests? Everybody should come in and eat. What does that have to do with what does that do with Leila Seder? What an odd time to do it. Teretz is punkt fakir. This is exactly what the Cheres is all about. Lo nigalu klal Yisrael ella b'schus the gemilas chasadim. And what was the gemilas chasadim? Says to us, Orchos Chaim. It was the breaking of the matzah. It was this lach ma'ani that we gave a piece over to our friend. That's the type of gemilas chasadim we're looking for, right? When a person looks at an individual and sees this one small thing that they can do, that's the type of chasadim that we're looking for. And number two, why is this lach ma'ani? Not the lachmanya of the geula, the lachmanya that we ate 210 years. Yeah, that's the same lechem that we ate. That's the lechem when we came out. We didn't change it one bit because our cheres is now in our control. We don't need any other external artificial factors to weigh in. A lot of the pshatim that we say, right? If you look in the Rishonim, there are a lot of beautiful pshatim all throughout the Rishonim on the Haggadah. So there are a lot of Geshmak HaTorahs, and also just stop to be able to see the way, you know, you're like a vort over here, a vort over there. But when you're coming from the Rishon, okay, we'll say maybe one more vort here. So there's a big question all of the Mefarshim ask. The Mefarshim ask, why is it that we don't make a bracha on the Haggadah? We should make a bracha. We have a mitzvah of Magid. It's a mitzvah deraisa. According to some, women are chayiv in that also, but it's a mitzvah deraisa for all men to say the Haggadah. So why is there no birchas mitzvah? Rabbi Berger, are you ready? I'm just stalling for you. Okay, so I'll quickly finish up the word. There's different answers to this. The famous word, Chassam Sofer says that we know that a person is supposed to view himself as if he's going actually through the process of the cherus, right? From the avos to the cherus. So Chassam Sofer says that we start off as if we were avodim before we really were klal Yisrael and had the ability to make brachas. So he says we only become klal Yisrael and get the schus and the level at the end, and therefore we make a bracha at the end of the magid. And I think he says maybe that's going to be included in the brachas mitzvah. We dafka don't make the mitzvah because we started off as avodim, right? Hashat avdim. We're going back in the beginning, right? That we started off with mamash avodim. We didn't even develop into anything. Only at the end we actually become chayv adam liros es atzmo keilu hu yatzim mitzrayim. So we're actually getting involved and going through the whole process, and we only come out as Jews at the end. As Rabbi Berger will say, we're still not fully Jews. We're only half Jews. He's leaving again. Rabbi Berger, I was stalling for you so that the door is closing. Okay. So anyway, so this is the famous word of Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer. Joey Greenberg. Wow. Okay, so the Chassam Sofer says this, right? Basically, it's kind of like saying the guys that went to secular college, you know, like they started off as Goyim, you know, but they're going to come. They actually did the opposite way because they started off as Yidden. But Joey wants to go to feel what it was like to be a Goy. So now we can come with the Leila Seder and come back with the Cheres and come out with all of the Brachas at the end of Leil HaSeder.
So I was asked to speak on what does freedom mean to me? What does it mean, freedom? Now, generally, people think that freedom means the ability to do anything that you choose, correct? That's not Judaism at all. So how do we talk about freedom as a value? And especially on Pesach, because we went from abdus lecherus, we went from slavery to freedom. And all, especially in the liberal world, they talk about Passover as the universal holiday that celebrates freedom. Where in the Torah does it talk about freedom as a goal? So interestingly enough, in Parshas Kisisa, it says, right before the Egel Azov, it says that Moshe Rabbeinu came down with the Luchos. The Luchos were written be'etzba Elokim, by the finger of God, Chorus al HaLuchos, engraved on the Luchos, and the Chazal tell us, I'll take your Chorus al HaCherus. Don't read Chorus al HaLuchos, but read the word Cherus al HaLuchos. There was freedom on the Luchos. She'en ben Chayrin al Misha Oseb Yatorah. There is no free man, but he who is involved in Torah. Now, you ask the average person, I'm going to ask Joey. Joey, can you You hear me? Joey.
Yeah.
How are you? Are you a child or an adult?
Both.
So speak to me as a child, Joey. What is freedom?
Freedom is not having any requirements or obligations.
Right. I can do whatever I want. How old are you, Joey?
19.
So Joey's, how tall are you?
5'9", 5'10".
5'9", and you're a big, round big tough kid. All right. So Joey says, when I was a 2-year-old, I was a 5-year-old, I was little, and my parents were big, and I was an avid. I had to do whatever they said. But now I decide what I do. I'm going to go to school. I'm going to go back to Shana Bet at Gesher. Whatever I'm going to do, I will make the decision. So what we really have to figure out is, what does it mean? We went from avdus l'cheres. We went from slavery to freedom. Ein ben chorin el misho osir b'torah. The only free man is the person who was involved in Torah. Now, the problem with that is as follows. We know that Reb Noach started his basic principles with the idea from that the Ramchal says in Maseilas Yesharim, as the Chazal tell us, this is in chapter 1 of Maseilas Yesharim, man was created for no other reason, we were created to get the maximum pleasure from God, to get the pleasure from his presence, being in his presence. And therefore, the number one goal of every human being is maximizing the pleasure they get out of their existence. Meanwhile, I don't hear anything about freedom. I hear nothing about freedom. My goal is to get pleasure. What is the most important tool I need in order to get pleasure? I want pleasure. What is the most important tool I need? How about money? Anybody who wants, I'd love to make this it's a nice small little group. Unmute and kick in. I want to get pleasure. What is the most important tool I need to get pleasure?
Truth.
Says Reb Yaakov, you have to know what's emes. Wait a second. People say, I want pleasure. What does truth have to do with it? But we can know that the reason is if I want the pleasures of life, I have to know the truths of life. Picture medicine. I want to get pleasure from the world of medicine. It's not enough to value medicine. We do a lot of research. We have to find out things, because only if I find out the difference between what's true and what's false in the world of medicine can I get pleasure from it. How about religion? I want to get pleasure. What is the reality of existence? So who's right about how to get pleasure? The Jews say one way. The Christians say another way. The Muslims say another way. The atheists say another way. Everybody says they want to get pleasure, but we do things very differently. What's the difference between the different systems is what you understand to be true. Everybody wants pleasure, and we can know that if the Christians are telling the truth, you ought to be a Christian. If the Muslims are telling the truth, you ought to be a Muslim. That if you want to get the maximum out of life, you have to find out what's true. And what gets in the way, without getting into a lot of the details, what gets into a huge amount of what gets in our way to get pleasure is that we all want pleasure, but we don't value truth. That the three basic areas that are identified, I'm not going to go into a deeper element, but what's identified in Pirkei Avos, chapter 4, Mishnah 21, which says, Hakina hataiva v'kavod motzin es adam min ha'olam. Jealousy, lust, and the drive for honor drives a person out of the world. And the Chazal tell us both this world and the world to come. Without going into detail, three things that get in our way in our drive for pleasure is, number one, short-term thinking. I'm a child rather than an adult. All I care about is what it feels like now. Instead of pleasure total, person says pleasure now. That's the childish way of doing things. And we also happen to be living in a society, in an economic system, which says, you know, the more you people make decisions like children rather than adults, the more you go for immediate gratification, the more money we're going to make off of you. So not only do we naturally understand that you're more of a child, that Joey may say he's 19, but he's actually, he's been a child for 19 years and he's only been an adult for 6 years. But the natural state of a person is short-term childish thinking. And we happen to be living in a society that really spends billions of advertising dollars to get you to be a child. Second problem is the animal self. I am my body. That it doesn't matter how much a person's involved in spirituality, his body always says, I am you, right? I am my body. Now, when I asked Joey how tall he is, he said 5'9". He's not talking about his soul. He's talking about his body. That's the way we are. We are by nature like that. And the third thing, kavod, means in my drive for pleasure, I am likely to abdicate my individuality, my capacity to know what's true in order to get pleasure, and abdicate to the world around us to give me the kavod that I want. And so our biggest problem, we're here to get pleasure. To get pleasure, you have to know what's true. You have to find out the truths of life. And the problem is the fact of your childishness, the fact of your animalness, the fact of your desperate attempt to get the approval of the world around you causes you to ignore what's true in a desperate attempt to make it to get pleasure. So it's really important to us where, and I'm going to ask for you, where does the question of freedom come in? Where does it come in? I want pleasure to get it. I have to know what's true. But not only does the world say, I want to be free, but actually the Chazal tell us, Pesach starts our lives as Jews. We went from Abdus l'Chairus. What is the difference between an Eved and a Ben Chori? What is the difference? An Eved has to follow the dictates of his master. Whatever the master says, you're going to have to do. You want to do something that's good for you, but the master wants you to do something that's good for him. The Eved has to do what the master says that's good for the master. Right? And so we left Egypt, from Abdus L'Chairus, we became free. They could no longer tell us what to do. But within 7 weeks, 7 weeks after we left Egypt, we received the Torah. And the Torah tells us that the information was Chorus al Aluchos, engraved on the Luchos. It's a play on the word Chairus. You get Chairus from the Luchos. Ein ben Chorin, the only free man, is someone who's involved in Torah. But wait a second, I want pleasure. What did freedom do? So I'd like to read from a couple of quotes from Erich Fromm, great psychologist, brilliant 20th century thinker. He died, I believe, in the 1980s. He wrote a very a very classic work called Escape from Freedom. Escape from Freedom. He says, there are two kinds of freedom. Freedom from and freedom for. Or freedom from and freedom to. Freedom from means I don't have to do, I used to be your slave, now I don't have to do what you say anymore. I am free of your control of me. Freedom too means the goal of life is not, I'm putting in my words now. Freedom too means the goal of life isn't freedom. Freedom is the means by which you achieve your goals in life. Picture the idea that we use. The goal of life is maximizing the pleasure you get out of your existence. Freedom too. I am free from subjecting myself to what the master says because I'm going to do the things that will get me the maximum pleasure. And so I'm quoting Eric Fromm in this one basic statement in his book, Escape from Freedom. The freedom of man is constituted not by a supposed ability to do anything he may choose, but in the power to identify himself with that true good, which reason reveals to him as his true good. Your freedom is not the ability to do anything you want. It's in the power. The freedom is the power to identify that which is true good, which reveals itself to you as what is the true good. Picture the idea that he's saying. Freedom doesn't mean you do whatever you want. It's to identify that which is true through whatever reasonable way. Remember, you have to use your head. Even to hear what God has to say to you about what's good, you first have to say, I want to find out. Who is God? What is God? Is he talking to me? Freedom is the power to identify that which is true, which your reason reveals to yourself as that which is true. Understand? You need to know what's true in order to get a handle on getting the pleasures out of life. And that's the idea that we mean from Abdus L'Cheirut. That instead of saying you will subjugate yourself to do whatever the Egyptians want, you are free of the Egyptians. And you get a Torah that tells you how to do the things that will get you the maximum. Wait a second, you'll say, but we're called avodaihem. We're called God's slaves. We do have a master. We have a master called God. But once you know that what we mean by God is the infinite source of all that exists is finite. And what can you, okay, I know you're muted, but I'll say it for you. What can you do for an infinite being? Nothing. And therefore, the only one you could go to in your freedom is go to the master that tells you how to get the maximum out of life and that he himself doesn't need you to do anything to do things for him. You don't do things for God. You do things to connect to God. But the crucial understanding, freedom does not mean the ability to do anything you choose to do. It's the power to identify yourself, that which is true, that your understanding, that your reason, that your application of your mind reveals to yourself as true. Because once you have that freedom of knowing what's true, you then can get the maximum out of life. And therefore, what does it mean? It says that it's a terrible thing when an eved says, a slave, even a Hebrew slave, I don't want to leave my master. So we drill the hole in his ear because he did. In his earlobe, because God said, "Avodaihem v'lo avodim avodim l'avoda." You're going to be my slave. I don't want you to be slaves to anyone but me. I'm the only one that you should listen to because I never tell you what you should do for me because I'm God. I'm infinite. You can't do anything for me. I want you to listen to me because anytime I tell you what to do, it's for your maximum benefit. And God said, don't become an eved of anyone other than me has needs. And therefore, if you're his eved, he's going to tell you to work for him. Work for nobody but me, because I'm the one that will tell you what you need, the information that you need. That there's nothing you do for me, it's for your connection to me. But that idea of freedom, therefore, the crucial element. Ein ben chorin el amisha osek batorah. As Eric Fromm says, freedom is not by the supposed ability to do anything you want. That's freedom from. All of freedom value is the freedom for. I have a goal, which is maximizing what I get out of life, and I'm going to escape the slavery of my childishness, which says, ignore what's true for the sake of how you feel now. I'm going to ignore my animalness, which says, escape your ability to connect to the infinite source of pleasure in order to serve your animal need. And perhaps most important, escape the slavery of your society that says that you are nothing unless the world around you says you're okay. Escape that slavery, the slavery of the group to the individual, says you're here to get the maximum out of life. And the way you do it is by finding out the truths of life. That's what we mean by freedom entails having the information to know how to make that connection to God and to not allow a world that makes a lot of money off of you by saying, don't do that. Do the things that please us most.
Karpas. Have you heard any different Torah on Karpas yet? Okay, this is up there in one of the all-time greats. I heard it years ago from Rav Isaac Bernstein, and then actually more recently I heard it from Rav Asher Weiss. So I'll give you a background to it. The Gemara in Psachim, it's on Daf Samach Hey Mid Beis. It describes in a very detailed manner the way in which a Jew would carry home his Korban Pesach from the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara says like this, Tana, Kol Echad Ve'Echad Noisein Pischai, every single person would put his Pesach Bi'Oirai in its skin, that means the animal's skin, U'mashir L'Achorov, and then he would swing it behind him. So the Gemara is just telling us that, you know, each person would first skin the Korban Pesach, then he would place the animal literally into the skin, and then finally he would throw it over his shoulder. Okay, so then the Gemara adds, Amar Rav Ilish stated, Bitayos, period, Bitayos. What does that mean, Bitayos? The Gemara just described exactly how they would do it. They would put the Korban Pesach in the skin. They would throw it over the shoulder. And the Gemara just says, I'm Rav Ilish Bitayos. So Rashi says that what this means is that the process of carrying home the Korban was very similar to the manner in which the Yishmaelim merchants would carry their goods. Very, very strange Gemara. Donnie, you hear that? You hear the Gemara?
I hear the Gemara of.
It says that they would, Vitayos, that they would carry, Rashi says that Rav Ilish was telling us that they would carry the Korban Pesach home the same way that the Sokrim Yishmaelim, the Yishmaelim merchants would carry home their Korban Pesach. What's the significance of the Sokrim Yishmaelim? What does that do with anything? Okay, so that's what Rashi says. Rav Shlomo Kluger has a Haggadah called Yirios Shlomo. You know what Rav Shlomo Kluger was? Shlomo Kluger was the Rebbe of the Beis HaLevi. It was the Rebbe of the Beis HaLevi. He grew up, the Beis HaLevi grew up in the same town as Shlomo Kluger, where he was the Rav. Shlomo Kluger was the Rav. And he used to, who's the Beis HaLevi? The father of Chaim. Father of Chaim. Rechaim Soloveitchik. So he used to say that he used to talk and learning all the time with the Beis HaLevi. So when the Beis HaLevi was leaving town, Rav Shlomo Kluger said, he said, you resolved every single kasha that I ever had. This is what he said to the Beis HaLevi. I talked to you in learning for all these years. Now you're leaving town. He says, there's only one kasha you won't be able to resolve. What am I going to do without you? So he said to the Beis HaLevi. So Shlomo Kluger writes in his Agada like this. It's amazing. He says that really at the Haggadah, during the Haggadah, we talk at great length about Paro and all the decrees that Paro made, the hardships, you know, the avodas parah, all the things that parah did, and then we speak about the geula from paro, etc. So we do go back even a little bit more than that, pre-Mitzrayim. But there's one thing that's never, this is what the Rishon LeKlugas says, there's one thing that's never addressed at the Seder. What is that? Again, the history goes back, but it doesn't go back all the way until why we ended up as slaves. Why did the Jewish people end up in Mitzrayim in slavery? Why did Hashem punish us with slavery in Mitzrayim? So the Farshim say very, very explicitly, Rabbeinu Bachya says in the Parshas Miketz, he says that if we're honest, the reason we were made avadim is because we sold our brother Yosef into slavery to whom? What does it say in Chumash? Who do we sell our brother to? The Sochrim Yishmaelim, the Yishmaeli merchants who were coming by. And therefore, the Rishon LeKlugas says that in the what the Gemara means to say, B'tayos, the way we brought home our Korban Pesach is that, the way he says is that we're inaugurating the entire Yontif of Pesach, you know, before the Seder, with a reminder of how it all started. Meaning that before you start talking about power and the decrees and the slavery, well, why were you put into slavery? The answer is because we sold our brother Yosef into slavery. So we were put into slavery. And therefore, as a reminder to the real cause of our slavery, we go ahead and we carry the Korban Pesach home the same way Sochrim Yishmaelim carry their goods. So that's what he says. It's a beautiful taich in the Gemara, and it's a beautiful chiddush. The problem is, again, and Shlomo Kluger explains that we have to begin that way, because otherwise you're missing the whole point. The whole point was that we got into this mess because of the sinas chinam, right? As Jews, our problems often begin internally, not externally. And therefore, if you're going to go into the Pesach Seder and not remember this point, that the reason was because due to sinas chinam that we got into the whole mess, well, then you're missing the whole point of what Kodesh Baruch Hu was trying to get us to realize through the slavery and then ultimately the redemption. So the shaila becomes very nice. Okay, so that was back then, Korban Pesach. They carried home in a certain way to remind them. Okay, bismaneinu anu, we don't have the Beis Hamikdash. We don't carry home Korban Pesach. So do we have a reminder of this before the Yontif, before our Seder, to remind us of the sale of Yosef, of the Makirasos? So have you ever heard anything about this? Oh, this is unbelievable. Okay, so he says like this. There's a Rabbeinu Manoach on the Rambam. The Rambam Hilchos Chametz Matzah. Okay, he says, look at this. It's one of the Mefarshim Chametz Matzah Perichas Halacha Beis. The Rabbeinu Manoach says, when talking about karpas, so it says, V'lokech Yerek, V'anu Noagin V'karpas. The Rabbeinu Manoach says, look, you got to look this up inside. Perichas Halacha Beis, Hilchos Chametz Matzah. V'anu Noagin V'karpas, Zecher Liksones HaPasim. The reason why we're knowing karpas in the very beginning of the Seder is Zecher Tiksones Pasim. So also Yaakov Avinu Yosef, that Yaakov Avinu made for Yosef, Asher Bisti Basa, due to this Ksonas Pasim, this Galgel Hadavar, the Yardu of Hussein of Mitzrayim. Because of this, the Ksonas Pasim, the things evolved, and our forefathers ended up going down to Mitzrayim. But that was the catalyst. The fact that we had the Ksonas Pasim, which obviously was what Yaakov made, and the continuation of that, God brought us down to Mitzrayim. So here already, the Rebbeinu Noach says that even in our day and age, the Karpas stands as a zecher to what happened with Yosef Atzad. Okay, so now, where do we dip the Karpas into? We dip it in the salt water. So do we begin the whole Seder night dipping into the bitter waters, because the Ksonas Pasim was dipped into where in the Chumash? Where was it dipped into?
The blood of like a...
Into the blood. Yeah. Into the blood. Exactly. So just as the brothers dipped the Ksonas Pasim into the blood, so when we take the Karpas, according to Rabbeinu Manoach, we're dipping it into the salt water as a remembrance of the bitterness of that move from the brothers. And therefore, even though we don't have the carbon Pesach, we don't have the way that we bring it home, at least we have the carpus with the dipping into the bitter water, which is going to remind us of the sale of Yosef. Okay, it gets better than that. Then you take a look in Parshas Vayeshev. This is amazing. Okay, where it talks about the Ksonas Pasim. Okay, there's a Rashi there that you run over when you do Shnei Mikra, but it says, V'Yisrael have a Yosef Yikol Banav, ki ben zekunim hulo. Okay, he loved Yosef more than all the other sons. But also loved Ksonas Pasim, and he made Ksonas Pasim. This is one of those, like, I don't know, like the grammatical Rashis that you don't want to read, but listen to this. It says, Pasim, lasen kli milas. And then he gives you an example. Where do you find, it was like fine wool, right? So where do we find this pasim, which means wool? He quotes from Megillas Esther, where you also find fine wool. Kimo, karpas uscheles. Karpas uscheles. And Megillas Esther uses karpas etymologically. The word itself, karpas, according to this Rashi, means that fine wool, which Ksonas Pasim was made out of. So not only is the karpas, in terms of the Rabbeinu Manoach, a zecher through the dipping, just as they dipped into the blood, but the word itself, karpas, the word itself means fine wool, which was what the Ksonas Pasim was made out of. Okay, then I found the Ben Ishchai. Okay, the Ben Ishchai takes this one step further. The Ben Ishchai expands on this, and he writes that in addition to the first dipping, which represents the whole start of the Golos, the whole reason of the Golos, the catalyst of the Golos, we have a second dipping of the night. And that is going to be representative, according to the Ben Ishchai, of the beginning of the Geula. What's the second dipping? The mar into the
Haroses.
So he says, Ben Ishchai says, already there, so it's no longer being dipped into the bitter tears. It's being dipped into something that's already sweet. So that represents the beginning of the Geula, and we begin to shed that initial sin of Sinas Chinam. How do you see that in that dipping, that we begin to shed the initial chet of Sinas Chinam? Because he says that, what does the pasuk say? Vayatbilu. Well, no, sorry. It says, Ulekachtem agudas ezel utvaltem adam asher basaf. What does that mean? Ulekachtem agudas ezel, a bundle of hyssop. And what do we do with that? We go ahead, utvaltem adam asher basaf. You take the bundle of hyssop, dip it into the blood that is in the basin. But what does it say? How do you take it? You don't just take a single branch. What do you take? This is the Ben Ishchai points out. Agudas ezo, a complete bundle, aguda. It's already together. So that's a remez, says the Ben Ishchai, to the achdus of Klal Yisrael. That in order to begin the real geula, and it's sweet because it begins the geula, you need to have an agudas ezov. It's a second dipping together with Klal Yisrael, and that serves as a remes to the precursor of Geula and Klal Yisrael. So, according to this, what we have over here in sum, to summarize, we have the two tvilas of the night that basically take us from the very, very, very beginning of the whole cause of the Seder. That's the karpas, and eventually we get towards the end of the Seder where we dip the mar into the charosis, but that dipping is a guda, it's a whole bunch, it's a bundle, and that represents already the tikkun, which is the achdus, the aguda, and that's how ultimately we'll be attacking that the gullus. Okay, that's one. Can I get one more quickie? One more quick one. Here we go. You gotta know this one. It says in the Magid, it says Vayisham Gagadol. Right, that's we quote the psukim from Parshas Kisavo over there, and we darshan everyone with the Torah Shabbat Peh, So it says the Jews were in Mitzrayim, the Goy Gadol, and then we have the Torah Shabbat Peh. The Medrash on that says, they were Mitzuyonim, which means they were distinguished over there in Mitzrayim. So what happened over there in Mitzrayim? So we know the Mepharshim speak about in Mitzrayim was the Kor HaBarzel. It was the process, literally Kor HaBarzel means the fiery furnace, which purified Klal Yisrael. We had to go through whatever we went through in Mitzrayim in order to eventually receive the Torah at Har Sinai. Okay, so how did this work exactly? We were immersed into Mitzrayim, into a society which was morally depraved. There was immorality everywhere around us. That's where we had to go in order to be able to receive the Torah. What about Mitzrayim was the Kor HaBarzel, was the refining process to allow us to receive the Torah? We were surrounded in Tumah everywhere we went. How could that be the refining process for Klal Yisrael? So Rav Soloveitchik says, I saw this in Ha'arei Kedem. If you have the Sefer, you can find the Sefer. It's the second volume. Rav Shurkin brings us down from Rav Soloveitchik. And he said that Mitzrayim obviously was known as a very advanced nation in terms of their wisdom. They had Chachamim, they had Chartumim. They were extremely advanced in their culture. Sefer Melachim even says by Shlomo HaMelech, that Shlomo HaMelech's wisdom surpassed even that of the wisdom of Mitzrayim. So we know that in Tanakh already, they speak about the tremendous wisdom of Mitzrayim. We had, and every Gaulus we went into, that was true. Babel in Greece and Rome, they were all known for the sophistication, their advanced culture, their advanced wisdom. And that's where we seem to end up in all our Gaulus. So Rav Soloveitchik says that this was actually a critical factor in us being able to receive the Torah. Why? We got situated in Mitzrayim. Everything was so advanced. A culture was advanced. The wisdom was advanced. Everything was so advanced. And then we turned around, we looked at who they were. Who were the Mitzrayim? After all their, you know, refinements and their culture, they were barbaric. The same people who were able to have such sophistication in their knowledge, their chachma, and their culture, those same people would be able to take babies and lay them as bricks, you know, in the middle of a pyramid. So here we took a look and we realized that look at what this culture has to offer. Zero. Look at what this wisdom has to offer. At the end of the day, it's zero, because look at what it leads to. So Rav Soloveitchik brought the most unbelievable raya from Chumash. You gotta take a look at this. I mean, this is not how I ever read these psukim before, but he says, this is what this raya is. It says that Moshe Rabbeinu came out and saw the Mitzri hitting the Jew, right? So what does the pasuk say? It's Perek Beis. Perek Beis, pasuk Yud Aleph, I think. It says, Vayigal Moshe Beitze Elach Avar Disabloisim. Vayar Ish Mitzri. This is Rav Soloveitchik's theme. He saw Ish Mitzri. He looks here and there. There's no one there. No one was looking. So he smote the Mitzri and he buried him in the sand. And he goes out the second. They see two Jews fighting. Okay. So what happens in, he says, why do you hit your friend? What happened in the psukim? First, what does he call him? He calls him an Ish Mitzri, right? Ish is a distinguished term. It wasn't just a Mitzri, it was an Ish Mitzri. And then all of a sudden, it says he looked back and forth, ki ain Ish, which pasuk shah means there was no one around. But Rav Soloveitchik said, he looked at him and he saw this. He was an animal on 2 feet. And it was the way he was hitting that Jew. He ain't Ish. He was not a man. This is an animal. And then what does the pasuk continue? Vayach es ha-mitzri. Who did he kill? It doesn't say he killed the Ish Mitzri. The pasuk a second ago called him an Ish Mitzri. And then when he hit him, it says he hit a Mitzri. What's up, shot? Because until the first time he saw him, the Mitzri on the exterior, they looked like they were refined. They looked like they were people of chachma, of wisdom. But when it got down to it, look who they were. They were disgusting. They were able to destroy people and not treat human life with any sense of sacred values. And all of a sudden, he says, Einish, this is not a man. This is not, these are not the people I thought. And it just says he hit a mitzvah because it's not an ish anymore. So Soloveitchik said like this. He said, if we wouldn't see that, we would get our Torah. We would think, okay, the Torah Kedusha is good, but any nation with enough wisdom can come onto these moral ethical behaviors by themselves. He needed to show us, to put us in a place where, quote unquote, it was so advanced in wisdom and culture that to see what comes out of that, so that when eventually we receive the Torah, we realize this is the only thing we can accept. This, the Torah HaKadosh, is the only thing which is comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, which could actually refine man to the point where he is, again, if someone adheres to Torah in its truest form, not people who claim to adhere to Torah. If someone's really adhering to Torah, we know what Torah can produce in terms of a personality, in terms of someone who cares about other people, in terms of someone who's sensitive to other people, in the highest moral and ethical behavior exists by someone who's truly adheres to the Torah. So we needed to be able to, because Berg didn't want us to always second guess, oh, maybe we can get this from another society. No. The only place you can become such a refined and moral person is through the Torah HaKadosha. So this Kor HaBarzel in Mitzrayim was in order for us to see that it can't happen anywhere else.